Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John,
and
by the way.
Good evening to you, Ben, and hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone, and as ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, you can always hear us live here at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday evenings on the World Wide Web, also at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. And we're going to start straight away with what to see in the sky over the coming week.
Now, Mercury, number one, is still hidden in the low after glow of sunset. That's what's rather difficult to see. I don't know whether you've actually really...
It'll be coming around shortly, but it's too close to the sun at the moment. It's coming around from the rear side, the far side of the sun.
It's sort of a quick-moving planet. So it's in and it's out and it's back again. So anyway, probably the one to look for really at the moment in the evening skies, sort of around... late evening, if you want, is Jupiter, and it's -2.8 all the same. It's bright, not quite as bright as Venus, but it certainly dominates the east during the evening and stands highest in the south around 11. I saw it again last night in a very clear sky, and in a telescope, Jupiter is still 49 or 48 arc seconds wide, nearly as big as we've ever seen it. And up there also is Venus, brilliant at a magnitude -4.3. It shines in the east-southeast just before and during dawn, and it rises a good 2 hours just before dawn's first light. You will get to see it, and I have seen it. And it's a weird late-night apparition coming up over the east horizon. I wouldn't say it's weird. I think it's brilliant. Uranus, Neptune, they're the two elusive ones, 5.6 for Uranus. And it is just 13 degrees east of Jupiter just at the moment. So if you are hunting Uranus, it's past its November the 13th opposition. So in a telescope at high power, Uranus is just a tiny but distinctly non-stellar ball, 3.8 arc seconds in diameter. Is that the one you've seen, or is it Neptune?
I've seen Uranus through binoculars.
I haven't managed
and
to
if
see
I remember correctly, I could see it. Once I knew where it was, I could see it with the naked eye.
Wow.
That's very, very good. Right, you have to know which dim dot you're looking at in the sky.
That's true.
Don't forget Saturn.
No, just, I'm going into Saturn now just in a second. And it's still quite easy to see, strangely enough, because it's only +0.8 in the magnitude. It's in dim Aquarius just a moment. It glows yellowish high in the south in the early evening, and it moves lower forward to the southwest as the evening grows late. And it actually twinkles. It's a strange one. That's what they say. So about two fists. There's a star also called Formalhaut.
Yeah, that's the way I pronounce it.
Yeah, it's strange, some of these, and I haven't been corrected yet, so it's a little bit further to Saturn's lower left. And the last one, of course, Neptune, which is quite elusive, 7.8 at the Aquarius-Pisces border. It's high in the evening, 24 degrees east of Saturn. We have to think about this one, see if we point a telescope that direction. And it's harder to resolve as a ball than Uranus is, but definitely a non-stellar at high power, if you get my drift. So the ones really to watch for, Jupiter, high in the sky, 11 o'clock midnight, absolutely brilliant to see. And going back to you, Ben, because you were at something at the weekend.
Oh, yes.
In the Phoenix Park,
Yeah, there was an event held at in the Phoenix Park at the weekend last Saturday in conjunction. It was Irish Astronomical Society, the IAS, in conjunction with the OPW at the Ashtown Interpretive Centre, Ashtown Castle. And we had member Dr. Donegal O'Driscoll giving us talk on the moon. He wasn't on the moon. The talk was about the moon, I should say, and the history of the moon and where the moon came from and the people who have gone to the moon and how far away it is in comparison to the 500 people who have been, say, in low Earth orbit. You see, absolutely huge difference between that. And then we had a few good few scopes outside. We had 100 or 200 people showing up throughout the night. And, there was all ages, from the youngsters to the grannies and granddads. And when they saw Saturn, the rings of Saturn, and Jupiter, and the cloud belts, and the four Galilean moons, there was lots of, most people are amazed when they see it for the first time through their own eyes. And,
it's you can see the rings. You sort of have to go away from the telescope to look up to see, did I really see that?
Yeah.
With Saturn, and especially if it's at its, I suppose, full angle towards us rather than the edge on that we would sometimes get. Mm. And it's remarkable to see, because the rings in Saturn are only about 3 meters deep in most of it. Okay, they stretch to a little bit further than that, but yeah, that most of them, but they stretch over hundreds of thousands of kilometers from the surface of the planet. And I just go back to Mars just for a minute, because it's disappeared on the 18th, just a few days back. It disappeared right behind the sun, and it's not going to emerge into our dawn view until around the end of January. So you're not going to get a chance to see Mars until then. So if you are looking around, no, it's just not going to happen, because it's directly, the sun is directly between us and Mars itself. So that's a quick run around the planets. So
thank you, John. Just a slightly better chance than normal. I've seen some not meteors tonight, the Alpha Monoceratoids, if I pronounce that correct.
Did you practice?
I usually know how to pronounce it until I come in here. the Monoceratid shower peaks this evening, or more correctly, in the early hours of tomorrow morning. And on Thursday, we mentioned Saturn. Saturn will be at eastern quadrature, which means it'll be exactly 90 degrees east of the sun. And on Sunday, the Pleiades, which we mentioned here many times before, but if you're wondering, you've never seen the Pleiades, or not sure if you've seen them, on Sunday the 20th in the evening, just a little bit to the upper left of the moon, 3 degrees, about the width of your finger, or two of your fingertips at arm's length, that's the Pleiades. And of course we have the International Space Station back in evening skies. I have the time for tomorrow.
Yep.
1 minute past six.
That's right.
Until about 6 minutes past six. Maximum altitude of 38 degrees, not bad at all, and a maximum magnitude or brightness of minus 2.9, which isn't bad either. So we shall hope for clear skies.
There's a good 4 minute pass on that one, and there's another one 90 minutes later at 7:37. And that's only for a minute, so you've got to get out there, and it's quite low that time, so it's the way the elliptical orbits work. So International Space Station came into our skies on the 17th, which is only a number of days back, and it is in our evening skies, and it's December the 6th. So we're lucky enough now to get to see that in our skies, which is a fantastic sign. I'm going to talk about the lost toolkit. It's gone viral, this thing.
I'm
going to talk about it in a few moments.
Maybe before that, I'll just tell you about the sun and the moon. The 66% waxing gibbous moon is on view. It's above our horizon at the moment. In fact, it was due south about half an hour ago, and it will set in the early hours of tomorrow morning, just about 1:15 in the morning. It will set, and it will rise tomorrow in the afternoon at about 2:45, when it will have reached a 74% phase, and it'll be due south again at 9:15 tomorrow evening, when it'll actually be increased to 86% phase as we head towards the full Beaver Moon on Monday the 27th. And that's the Beaver Moon is, I think, one of the North American native, what they call the moon in November. It's apparently when they went out hunting beavers.
Yep.
At that time of the year. Yes, then of course we have sunrise tomorrow in Dublin. It's 2 minutes past 8 tomorrow, which is 13 minutes later than a week ago. And the sun will pass the meridian at 11 minutes past 12 and set at 19 minutes past 4 tomorrow afternoon, which is 10 minutes earlier than a week ago. And from then until 5 o'clock, we'll have civil twilight. And from 5 o'clock till about 20 minutes to 6 or so, we'll have nautical twilight. And from then till just before half past 6, we'll have astronomical twilight. And from 27 minutes past 6, actually, onwards, we have astronomical night. That means we'll have 23 minutes less daylight than a week ago. And tomorrow will be another 2 minutes and 57 seconds less daylight than today, when there will be 8 hours and 18 minutes between sunrise and sunset. So the days are certainly getting shorter. No doubt about that.
No, indeed not. Now, let's go back to the lost tool bag in space. Now, we mentioned this last week. No, it did happen a few days before that as well, but it's really come on stream this particular week onto mainstream news, reaching television and radio alike, and pictures all over the place of this. It's, as we mentioned last week, it's a smallish tool bag with a tether on each end. There was a hook, which wasn't hooked to where it was supposed to be hooked. And somebody dropped it up there. So the two astronauts involved were Jasmine Mogvelli and Laurel O'Hara, and they conducted a spacewalk which lasted about 6 hours and 42 minutes, which is remarkable, and did it a series of readjustments and things like that. So they had actually finished everything, so no doubt they were tidying up. And they got back into the International Space Station to suddenly find that the toolkit wasn't attached to anything that came back with them. Now, the really weird thing about this as well is astronaut Satoshi Furukawa was busy taking photographs out through the windows of the space station, and he just happened to click at the same time as the toolkit was flying across his view as well. So he was taking pictures of Mount Fujiyama in Japan, just because that's where he comes from, and it was just a spot of luck that particular thing happened. So that's where the big photograph is coming from. So astronomers from the Virtual Telescope Project on the ground have since spotted the bag orbiting the Earth a few minutes ahead of the ISS. So how we get to see this at the moment, and it seemingly is in view just ahead of where the International Space Station comes into view. So we're lucky that we're going to see this for the next couple of weeks. And you'll see, if you have binoculars or telescopes, not really the man probably to watch the ISS.
Hard to track something that moves that fast across the sky in a telescope.
Yeah, and the experts are saying that amateurs should be able to see the bag using binoculars or a telescope. Let's stay away from the telescope in the coming days. And the bag has been actually classified as space junk at this stage and given an ID number of 58229-1998-067WC. Now, I was trying to find out what was in this particular bag. They haven't given us any details what it is. So if every time that you see the space station coming across, lucky enough that sometimes you would see it twice. It came across this evening quite early, actually, about 4:20 to 6 or something like that. But some of you may have seen it. But if you were pointing a pair of binoculars at it, tomorrow would be a good time to see it. And I've just lost the time again. Oh, I have it here. That will be the 22nd. So we have 6:01 p.m. Dublin time. And it's in the skies for about 4 minutes. So if you point your binoculars up at the space station just in front, you might see this faint shiny thing,
as it's got a reflective.
Well, it's got a reflective thing, and the sun will reflect back at us. So you've got a good chance to see that. And again, just for a minute, it's 7:37 tomorrow evening, and it'll appear again on Thursday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. So if you do get to miss it, if it is cloudy, not sure what it's doing out there at the moment. But if it is cloudy, you'll get a couple of chances over the next fortnight to see the space station itself and a little toolkit worth $100,000.
Get ahead of it.
Now, they reckon it's going to be up there for about a month before it meanders its way back into the Earth's atmosphere. Some people were worried about what happens if it comes through and hits us, but there's absolutely no chance of that because it's so small. A couple of spanners, a couple of hammers, a couple of grease guns, and that sort of thing.
Probably.
Yep, that sort of thing is what's in it and what they use for experiments. No doubt, over the next coming weeks or so, they might release what's in there, but certainly at $100,000, and really much it is, $100,000 a euro, it doesn't matter, but you will get to see a chance to see this, providing you have good eyesight like you have. So, there we go. That's how to spot the little thingy, but certainly a huge amount of interest on the media. And it's taken about, because we mentioned it last week, and nobody mentioned anything. And the first time I heard it on the radio or television was this morning. So it's whatever way it's filtered through, we seem to get the news first.
You hear it first on the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett, and our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We're also available as a podcast and also live on the World Wide Web at dublincityfm.ie. Now, Mr. Elon Musk had another
episode, another
unfortunate event. There was a rapid, unscheduled disassembly. I think that's a bit of a euphemism now. When the second flight of Starship didn't go quite as planned. It was planned to be a suborbital 90-minute flight, at least this time, if you may remember, John, of course, the first one did blow up a few minutes after on the way up. This was, I think it was about 2 or 3 minutes in, but this one is about 8 minutes in, and they did get further than the last one. And because of that, they're putting a very positive spin on it and saying it was a great success and we learned so much from the last one and we got further this time and we learned a lot from what happened here. And it wasn't just the big rocket itself that had a rapid, unscheduled disassembly. A rapid, unscheduled disassembly. In other words, it broke apart or it was blown up. I think it was one of the computers on board triggered a self-destruct because things weren't going too well. But also one of the booster rockets that are supposed to come back and land to be reused again, that also broke apart on its way back down to the surface. So it wasn't a great day for Mr. Musk and co. But he does say he says he'll have another one ready to go before Christmas. But that's, I think he's been quite optimistic there, John, because
I think he also needs,
I believe they have 3 of them in production at the moment. They're actually, making them or manufacturing or assembling the 3 new ones. But before then, he has to get his license back from the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, which oversees the investigation when these rockets don't work according to plan. So they're investigating last Saturday's breakup of the rocket, and they'll have to issue a license when they're happy that things can, whatever happened, can be rectified and that there will be no danger to man or beast or environment as best they can. So I think he might be optimistic with getting another one into orbit by Christmas. But we'll wait and see.
Yeah, we had the Leonid meteor shower just over past weekend. I don't know if many of you might have seen it. I didn't because I forgot all about it. And that was on the 18th, Saturday morning. It is known for producing some of the most amazing meteor displays in the annals of astronomy. Most notable are meteor storms. I don't know if you remember this one, Ben, in 1799. Then there was 1830.
The year 1799.
There was another notable one in 1833 and 1966. I think I was just a little bit young for that. And then 1999, 2001, and 2002. So I don't think they appeared as well as they normally would do, but they're still worth watching. You get probably about 20 meters per hour. I think the moon was out of sight fairly much at that particular one and during the weekend. So some of you may have got to see these shooting stars through the sky and were wondering what they were. They were the Leoniders. I'm trying to figure out what is next on the meteor shower list. I'll look that one up for next week and see, because we've some in December, all right. Yeah, definitely. So, but certainly the Leonids, one of the most famous, and the Perseids and the Geminids and all that sort of things. So we'll keep an eye on that for you as well. Just to go off the beaten track a bit, do you know the difference between artificial intelligence and the intelligence that we have? It's always been baffling. What is the actual difference? So the AI, which is seemingly taking over hugely, is the intelligence of machines or software, as opposed to the intelligence of humans or animals. So that's the definite way of describing AI. So it's keep your eyes beamed out for AI coming your way, because it seems all sorts of different things much quicker than we do, certainly in the astronomy world.
That would be an economical matter, Ted. Yeah. Okay, so when people go back to the moon, John, which is, of course, the Americans are planning on being there within the next 2 years, or late 25 or early 2026, I still think that's a bit optimistic, because they're actually depending on Mr. Musk again for his Starship rocket to land, to go from lunar orbit down onto the lunar surface. And but in the longer term, of course, to have colonies on the moon and people to live there long term, they're going to need to grow food. And of course the soil, as soil again being a euphemism for the dirt and grit and silicon little stones that they have on the moon, is not good, of course, for growing. You can't grow anything in it, and it's sterile. But anyway, I see some Chinese agricultural students have found that certain bacteria on Earth soil could offer a solution. Now, they've done some studies on three species of bacteria, which apparently increases the amount of phosphorus content in the soil or the regolith, and they have done experiments with them without these three bacteria, and the growth of in regolith, or in simulated regolith, what they believe, you know, sort of chemically synthesized moon dust, you might say. And there seems to be much better growth in that soil or regolith that contains these particular microbes in the soil. And I actually had the name of the tree here when I came through. Oh, there they are. Bacillus mucilaginus. Bacillus Megatherium and Pseudomonas fluorescens, which I presume is a species of course, Pseudomonas is a pathogen, if I remember correctly, and I presume fluorescens must be one that fluoresces. And we've heard, of course, of Bacillus as well. So two Bacillus, Bacillus mucilaginus and Bacillus Megatherium. And the presence in the soil helps to boost the growth of the things, grow better, stronger, bigger. So, it's a way forward.
Now, just going up to a comet that's called the Devil Comet, which is known in astronomical words as 12P Pons Brooks. It's approaching Earth at the moment. Why is it flaring up, horns and all? We want to know. So, it should soon come within reach of small telescopes or even binoculars. So, this is a bit exciting, because so far this year we haven't had too much in terms of any bright comets at all whatsoever, apart from, of course, the much ballyhooed green comet C2022E3 that was back in January. So it hasn't really been anything much since then. But barring an ever possible newcomer, the 12P Pons Brooks should come within the reach of small telescopes and even binoculars. And they are saying that if you have even a 4-inch or 102mm telescope, you'll get a chance to see this particular one. And it may even brighten up to naked eye visibility during March. So we'll keep an eye out on that over the next coming months. And it's just reading back as well. It was July the 21st, 1812, that a French astronomer, Jean-Louis Pons discovered a comet of magnitude 6.5, so it was quite dim, near the border of two rather dim constellations in around the Lynx area. So, the lower the figure of magnitude, the brighter the object, so it was described as a shapeless object with no tail. So we're going to Over the next coming months, we'll see exactly what's going to happen to that, and it'll be interesting to see what will happen. So as it brightens, as it gets closer to Earth, and I think it'll just probably appear, as I can see a quick photo of it here, of just a big sort of a disc which has a face of a devil in it with two horns sticking out of it. So just keep an eye out for that one. No need to fear. It's quite a long way away.
Thank you, John. We have upcoming, later on in this month, it is planned to launch the very first Irish satellite. And if you want some more details on that, yesterday I saw a very good, there's a 22-minute video on it. I presume it's on YouTube too, but I got it via the ESA.int website, and it's all about the AirSat 1, the first Irish satellite due to be launched at the end of this month, and what the students in UCD and their professor Lorraine Hanlon hope to do, and the type of information they want to gather from it. And I strongly recommend that you could do worse with 22 minutes now than watch it. There's a bit of humor in it too, and there's the enthusiasm of the students, of course, is absolutely fantastic. And thanks to Alan for his text. He's receiving us loud and clear down in Kildare.
Yeah,
good. And thank you to Linda in Baldoyle for her text too.
Yeah, thanks indeed. So we have two definite listeners tonight, which is great as well. Now, you and I both have telescopes. Yours is a Celestron 4-inch.
4-inch or
102 mil, so you get to see the comet. Right. Mine is the Celestron C8, and it was one of the early ones because I've had it quite a number of years at this stage, so it doesn't have the go-to facility on it now. Mm. If you were looking for telescope, seeing as the little man in the red suit's coming soon, in 34 more sleeps, by the way, just in case you're interested.
No.
Well, I certainly am. And it takes up quite a bit of setting up to set up the 8-inch. You have to bring out the tripod, you have to set it up, you have to line it up with the North Star, etc. If you were going for another telescope, what would you go for?
Yeah, bigger and better. I would go for something with motor-driven, a go-to, although there is a lot to be said for doing the hard way, which are book and your guide, and find this constellation, go up in between those two stars, and to track it, and which are finder scope, and then say, wow, and there's the
Andromeda
the Andromeda Galaxy or the Bubble Nebula or the Dumbbell Nebula. When you find it through a book, I have the book. Was it Turn Left at Orion?
That's it, yeah, I have that too.
And it's very good, and you follow it, and then you can find all these. And it's divided into sections for what's on view in the summer and the winter and the spring and whatever the season is. So it's very good. Yeah, and then I'd get something with a bigger lens or mirror, probably go up 8-inch. Well, I mean, I'd like the 16-inch Mead tracking on its own. With something like that, though, you'd have to put it in a permanent home, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. Big cement.
That's the trouble with it. It needs to be set up or easy to set up. So if I was going for a second one, I'd bring it back down a little bit, maybe 4, 5, 6 inches. You can put it on a table. Just bring it out, put it on the table, point it with the go-to, and off you go. So Celestron CT, the Smith Cassegrain, is the one I would go for, just for quick gazing, and I'd use the bigger one for deeper, longer evenings, because I just find that I won't take it out tonight because it takes too long to set up.
Well, that's the thing about the big, but if you had the Ford, 12-inch, 14-inch, 16-inch, of course you're talking bigger money, but you would need a permanent home for it in your own little observatory with a rollback roof, etc., etc.
There we go. So we'll talk about those over the next coming weeks.
Yes, indeed. Ooh, time's run away with us again. Thanks for your texts. And Alan lets us know that Japan they're planning their little micro rover for their next moon mission. I don't know anything about that at the moment, but I will do my homework. So thank you. Thank you very much for that. Don't forget our email address is astronomy@wcfm.ie. Thanks to John for his news items. And thanks to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon for making the show available on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Threads with Bren Lynott. Then at 10 p.m, we have Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe. And from midnight till 2 a.m, Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul with a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in the shield, and the sun is a great spot on you.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.